What up, folks? It's O'Shea Davis with the Working Wonder Podcast. And today's my special guest is the one and only Captain Matthew Bell. The first time that I met Cap Bell was actually when I was at Station 25's. We was responding to a business fire alarm, and I remember being told that he was changing the culture of ladder trucks or ladder companies. Some people call them trucks, some people call them ladders. But I'm honored to speak with him today, so I want him to introduce himself. We're going to talk about rescue. We're going to talk about the fire service and his passion for rescue. So introduce yourself, Cap, if you don't mind.
Hey, O'Shea, thanks for having me, buddy. My name is Matt Bell, captain at Rescue 4, Tulsa Fire Department on B Platoon. I'm a task force leader for Oklahoma Task Force 1 on the Tulsa side for the Blue Team, and I'm glad to be here, buddy.
So what is the Blue Team? I got to ask you that. So is there a Red Team, Blue Team, White Team?
Yeah, we have three teams on the task force. You got a Red Team, a White Team, and a Blue Team, and it's just set up on a schedule on how we deploy. You know, 1 month, Red Team's up. Next month, White Team's up. They're on stand up, stand down, and then ready to deploy.
Awesome. I didn't even know that. So with that being said, so where are you from?
I grew up in Skytook, Oklahoma.
Did you go to high school there as well, or middle school?
I did, yeah. I went to middle school and high school, Skytook. I graduated in 1997.
What was your graduation class?
Yeah, we had around 100. We had around 100. I think we were 2A back then. It's grown quite a bit.
Played any sports, baseball, basketball?
I played football. I wrestled. I was in FFA and showed livestock.
Oh, awesome, man. Yeah, you stayed active. Did that keep you out of trouble, you
think? Oh, I don't know about keeping me out of trouble, but it kept me busy.
Oh, good. Did you have any siblings growing up that you looked up to?
Yeah, I did. I have a sister, Nancy. She's a detective for the police department. And then I've got several half-siblings.
How many? So what about kids, wife, everything?
Yeah, I'm married. My wife's name's Tanya. We've been together a little over 20 years. I have two daughters, Callie and Ember. So Ember's got one more year, and she'll be graduating high school. And my oldest daughter, Callie, just had her first kid. So I recently became a grandpa.
Wow, congratulations again, man. That's amazing. Stay pretty busy, I'm sure, with wife, now grandkid, and the other one going to college. Is she planning on going to college? Or what's
her plan? She'll be a senior next year. I think she's going to go to RN school, like her mom, become a nurse.
I see pictures of your family. You got a good-looking family. So what drew you into the fire service? Obviously, everyone has something, maybe your why or a situation that occurred that drew you to the fire service.
To start, my dad was a sergeant robbery and homicide for the Tulsa Police Department. I grew up as a kid having a dad who was a homicide detective. And him and my mother got divorced when I was pretty young. And my mom remarried my stepfather, Kelly Beard, who was on the fire department here in Tulsa. So had a pretty strong influence, law enforcement, fire service. Kind of didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to do something when I got out of high school in public safety. Mm-hmm. And I'd grown up going to Station 4 and, you know, being around the Tulsa Fire Department and around the police station, you know, going downtown. And really didn't know law enforcement or be in the fire service. I liked them both. I got some opportunities out of high school to volunteer on a fire department and also be a reserve deputy. And so I kind of got a taste both worlds, and I really enjoyed them both. Long story short, my father recommended that I join the fire service due to a lot of changes in law enforcement, and he just felt like it was a better career path. That's what I chose to do.
That's awesome. So you say your stepfather was on, right? He was on. So he was at Station 4. So was it a rescue team then back then?
Yeah, he was part of the group that started it. So he worked at Central most of his career, downtown, Ladder 1. And then as 4's transitioned to the rescue station, he was a captain there on Ladder 4, Rescue 4. And then he finished his career at Station 7. His last 2 years on the job, when I got out of the academy, I was assigned to Station 2-1. So he moved over to 7's just so we could kind of see each other on calls and kind of be around each other the last 2 years of his career.
It's nice to know that influences don't always have to be blood related, right? Sometimes it's just a relationship itself, and that's impactful, which kind of goes right into the next question, which is, who are your influences and why? And it sounded like your stepfather and your dad was a great influence on you joining any kind of sector of public service, but specifically the fire service, correct?
You know, I felt blessed because I knew what I wanted to do right out of high school. Talked to a lot of young athletes from coaching football and always ask them, what do you want to do when you graduate? And you'd be surprised, a lot of them don't really know. Nope. And so felt very fortunate that I had a path and kind of knew what I wanted to do.
And that's what's so important about having representation. For example, if you didn't have anyone in the fire service, you may have never thought about it, right? But because you did, it was a possibility for you. So the representation is such a powerful influence. What year did you come on to the Tulsa Fire Department?
So I came on Tulsa in 2002. I started out in the fire service at the age of 16, volunteering for a really small rural fire department out where I grew up, west of Skytook, called Country Corner. I started, they gave me an opportunity, and so I took it. When I graduated, I got my EMT license, and I went to work for Collinsville EMS. And got on Skytook Fire Department. They had just transitioned to adding some paid members, and I was one of the first full-time firefighters for Skytook. We have quite a few here on Tulsa that were a part of that group. Been neat to watch everybody kind of go through and progress to Tulsa and advance in their careers out of there.
Kind of like when you go to elementary school with somebody, and then you go to middle school with them, then high school with them. It's kind of like that, right? You see them developing, and you see them grow into their families and their role as leaders and different positions that they promote. One thing that me and you talked about prior to recording this podcast, which was a pretty significant incident in the fire service that we're going to talk about here on the podcast. I'm sure tons of people have a perspective for this one, specifically Chad Meyer. Bernard School Fire. All right. So let's look at that from a rescue point of view, not just the firefighting aspect, but because rescue is your forte, how would you break that down as far as your experience of that fire, things that you felt like you could have done better, how we could have better prepared for that situation and incident? What do you think?
So I was at Station 2-1 as a driver or lieutenant. Riding out when Barner School Fire came in, I had Jeremiah Mefford and Spencer Manier. And Spencer Manier was a rookie. You know, I think it was, I can't remember exactly, but 2:30, 3 in the morning when the drop hit for Barnard. We arrived on scene. We had some flames showing out of the first story window of a classroom. Station 7, Station 5, Station 4 were already on scene. And they had already made entry into the building. And Chief Eddie Bell, District 1 Chief, assigned us to search for fire extinction in the building, attached us with Engine 4. When we made entrance into the building, we initially were looking for Engine 4, didn't quite know where they were at. I was trying to get linked up with them. And so we made entry into the school on the west side through the hallway. And we advanced past two classroom doors down the hall when the first backdraft took place. At the time, didn't know what it was. We just felt the building shake and rumble and immediately knew, hey, something's wrong. In my mind, I was envisioning that the ceiling or roof had collapsed in a portion of the building because we kind of felt like a rush of air. And at that time, I turned around and told my crew, I said, we need to get out of here. And as soon as I said that, the second explosion or backdraft took place. It blew us out of the hallway, outside the door, into the yard. So it was definitely a first experience for me, something that you just don't really expect that going into a fire. We always expect them to go out and things to go well. To answer your question, I learned a significant amount. That fire was really probably the turning point for me to realize I need to get a lot better. You know, I was a young lieutenant. You know, we didn't have a hose line. We didn't have anything in place. We were just being aggressive and going to get in there. And looking back at it now, I go, man, I should have made some better decisions. We should have had a hose line in place. We should have communicated and found out where Engine 4 is and done things a little bit better. We were just trying to be a little overly aggressive, I think. For me, the lessons learned from that, there was a lot of things I took from that fire that, for me, I had to make a choice. I can take this incident, I can learn from it, and I can get a lot better. I can become a master of my skills by doing training, because that fire could have went a lot worse than what it did. We could have had some members significantly injured worse. I mean, we had a lot of guys get burned and obviously some injuries. I did some time in the burn unit and had to get some skin grafts as well. And not a fun process, but we were very, very blessed and fortunate that everyone made it out of that thing with what we did. So
absolutely. Like you hear, experience is what you get after you need it. So it was one of those situations. Luckily, no one was. Did anyone retire because of that fire?
I don't believe so. I don't believe it retired anybody. It probably made some of us think about retiring. But I don't think anybody retired from it. Several of us, you know, Terry Civedon, he had some pretty significant injuries. And me, him, and Mike Rodriguez spent quite a bit of time together in the burn unit. And some memories from that, good and bad. But we all got very, very lucky in that deal. But for me, it was seeing the teamwork, you know, little things stand out to me. Ward being there, I remember he told me to sit down multiple times, and I wasn't going to sit down. And next thing I know, I'm sitting down. And I know you've had him on the podcast. You know, he started an IV on me standing up, and next thing I know, I'm sitting down. Having Mike Ward there was really good. Danny Height, one of my best friends, stood there and poured water on my hand the whole time. Never left my side. I know Threes was rapid intervention that night with Captain Chad Meyer, and they all did a great job.
I want people to know that on this podcast that a lot of what bonds us together, the fire service, is sometimes it's trauma. It's sometimes life and death situations. Just in a flash of eye, you realize that it could have been over. And we have a strange sense of humor on how we cope with things because of that. I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad everyone's okay. I think these are important fires to talk about because at some point you're going to be retired and other guys are too. So Barnard School Fire, it won't be... There won't be any more storytellers of it. I think it's important that these things live on and these lessons live on so that we too can learn from it. Because someone told me that there was the only double backdraft in history. Is that true? That's been reported?
You know, I heard that same thing. I really don't know. I think it was the only one that was actually caught on video. News on 6 had a camera on the building when we got there. They were already on scene, and so they captured it. And you can see on that video, it's on YouTube, the basement backdrafting. From my understanding, when they did the investigation, when the basement backdraft pushed all that heat up into the upper portion, so Barnard had been re-roofed. It had a rain roof, and so there were several voids that were filled with superheated smoke. When the basement backdraft, it allowed all that oxygen to go up into the upper portion and cause the upper portion of the building to explode also. I can remember Jeremiah Mefford. He said, "You told me to turn around and run, and my feet wouldn't touch the ground. We were airborne." I've always thought really the only thing comparable to what we felt is if you went out to the airport and stood behind a 747 jet engine and had them crank it full throttle, because that's kind of what it felt like to us. So we got very lucky. Our gear held up really well. The whole right side of my gear was discolored, and you could tell that that's where I took the main blast. It melted my SCBA bottle gauge. The glass in it was melted. All the Velcro on our gear was liquefied. But our gear held up. I don't know who, if Mike Mallory or the safety chief, who's doing the gear, but they do a really good job, because I really felt like having really good gear was a really important part of us making it out of there.
I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad
I appreciate
you're okay.
You.
I want to talk about some of your important lessons that you've learned in each position, meaning starting at firefighter level. I know you got to kind of dig deep into your brain and all the wonderful memories, good and bad, that you've experienced on the fire service. But if you can come up with one or two of those that you learned as a young firefighter that you'll never forget.
I've learned a lot in my career. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've learned from my mistakes, and I still make mistakes. And I think for me, you know, when you're a firefighter on the back of a fire truck, you're really quick to judge. You know, you're sitting on the back and you're watching an officer and a driver, and you sit back there and you think, man, what are we doing, or I could do better. And I think as I've gotten older, had opportunities to be a lieutenant and a captain, I look back and think, man, I wish I would have been humble. I wish I would have asked more questions and took more opportunities to learn from some of the guys that were on this job when I came on. It's been hard to watch a lot of them go. Very experienced, very knowledgeable, tough firefighters. In 21 years I've been on Tulsa, I've watched them retire and go, and I think, man, we have lost a lot of value, their experience and their education in the fire service. And so as a firefighter, probably my biggest lesson is, you know, I've worked for some really good captains and I've worked for a few bad ones, and I've tried to learn from those experiences to try to take those with me as now that I am a captain, try to carry some of those lessons with me to the fire truck. You know, one of the experiences probably that I learned a lot from was actually in 2001 as a firefighter, when I was actually still employed with Skytook. Me and Patrick Young were young, really gung-ho about rope rescue, and we were out at Station 2 in Skytook on a really nice spring afternoon doing some rappelling. We decided we were going to rappel off the top of the drill tower out there. We We didn't have some things probably set up correctly at the time. I was just doing a single one-person rappel off the top of the tower, so I set up my system, and when I leaned off the top of the tower, my webbing broke in half, and I fell 38 feet and hit the ground. That was probably, as a firefighter, one of the most important lessons I learned was to make sure that you have things done correctly. I was overconfident at the time in thinking, you know, you can't get hurt and nothing really bad can happen to you, and didn't have some of those secondary anchor point established. Learned a really valuable lesson in that sometimes the training we go through, the things they teach you, you need to have those things in place in the real world, or you can end up getting hurt.
Literally falling your face, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're okay from that, too. I think I'm going to say that a lot about you today. I think it's going to be a lot. I'm glad you're here and survived that, right?
Yeah, if you've ever noticed my nose, it's kind of messed up looking. That's what caused that, so.
Oh, did it? Yeah. Oh, wow. Did they have to do surgery on
you? Yeah, they did. It ripped my left nostril completely off, and so they had to sew it back. And luckily, you know, I've always been told if you're going to be dumb, you got to be tough. I got some stitches and went through that little process. Put me down for a couple weeks. But what's funny about that story is I had just got called and offered a job on Tulsa 3 days before I fell. So I was trying to keep it on the down low and not let anybody really know that, man, this guy just fell 38 feet and hit the ground. Hey, here I am 21 years later, and I feel a little older from it probably. But, hey, we're still moving, man.
Well, you're still pretty tough in the morning whenever I try to wrestle you for your coffee, so still got the strength. So now the next position we're going to talk about is you. You mentioned a little bit about being a young lieutenant or FEO at the time, so fire equipment operator. So what is one of an important lesson that you learned in leadership or being a lieutenant, whether that be something you wish you would have done better or advice that you can give me and other young lieutenants? Just take us into the world of you as a young lieutenant and what you learned.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think I knew what leadership was when I was promoted to lieutenant. I really didn't. I probably didn't bring much leadership to the table as a young lieutenant. I kind of just operated off what I'd seen from being on the back as a firefighter and watching decisions and things that people did. Leadership was not in my vocabulary. My biggest advice is, you know, as you get older and you mature, you start to understand leadership a little bit better, and the ego and some of those things that you have when you're younger. As you start to get older, I started to realize, you know, I needed to start learning leadership and getting better at it. Looking back, that's probably my biggest regret in my career is I didn't have any leadership training or anyone really pushing leadership onto me. And now I work for Chief Gilkison now, and he is the leadership guy. He's helped me tremendously with leadership. Start diving into leadership classes, you start identifying areas that you go, man, I need to try to improve on that. And leadership can be very challenging. Trying to learn it and applying it is really hard sometimes. And you know, for me as a young lieutenant, to answer your question, leadership was definitely a weak area for me, and I still struggle with it sometimes. Diving into the two leadership classes and learning and listening to podcasts and listening to other people across the country, man, it kind of keeps it on your thought process to keep thinking about leadership and building a good crew and a team and building relationships. It's important in the fire service, I feel.
Absolutely. I would say it's valuable in life, period. Even if you're not a people person, when you tell stories about your life, it's going to include people. The relationships you have with people, how they made you feel, what they did for you, what you did for them maybe. But it's important that we see that early enough in our lives that we don't let the day go by. Like you said, it was a lot of guys that left. You wish you would have asked more questions. And that's part of the reason why I did this podcast was that I can learn from anybody. And it didn't matter if they were a firefighter or not, whatever they did, they have a story to tell. And we can learn from each other's story. Now we're going to talk about the lessons you learned as a captain. So obviously you've been a captain the longest of all positions, correct? Or was you? Yeah. How long have you been a captain?
I think it's probably been around 9 years, 9, 10 years. Yeah.
Okay. What was your biggest mental shift as a captain? If you can time warp back your first year as captain, your perspective, how you thought things were until now, and how your thought process has changed to realizing so much more. Does that make sense?
Man, I think that goes back to, I mean, what we were just talking about. I think it goes back to leadership. You know, you make captain and you're excited because you get to be the captain. I think there's a lot of learning lessons your first couple years as a captain, trying to know your place, trying to understand how am I going to run this fire company? What are some of my goals? Where do those goals align with the other members on your crew? I was on engines my entire career. And when I promoted to captain, Dwayne Golden, who was my first captain at Station 21, asked me to come work for him. And so I went to Station 29 on Ladder 29. And it was my first time to ever be on a ladder as far as an assignment in my entire career. Stepping into that, being a brand new captain, not really knowing truck work or ladder work, and it opened my eyes probably more looking back is dealing with people. People are real. They have real issues. They have things going on at home. And when you work in places with really solid firefighters and then you make captain and you get members that have other things going on in their lives that I really didn't have much experience managing people that had things going on in their lives. So captain, that was a little difficult for me to start with, to understand people on your crew are real and they have to deal with real issues and being mindful of that, being there for them, supporting them through some of those issues, wasn't real good at right out of the gate. I learned a lot of valuable lessons from just time, being with different people and understanding that life can be hard on people and across the job. You know, people are losing family members or going through divorce or some types of substance issue. And so communication and building relationships to me is probably the two things as a captain that I've really learned super important, super valuable. Is having those relationships so when something like that happens to one of your crew members, they feel comfortable with coming to you and saying, hey, I got this going on, and being there for them to get them through it.
As you stepped from year one to year nine, that you matured as a captain, realizing that people do have feelings, they have issues, they have problems. Obviously, in the fire department, it's a very kind of macho atmosphere for the most part. We bunch of tough guys, don't like to show our soft side, you know. But we're human beings, and we hide a lot of things just because we believe that the battle is ours to face and no one else's. But part of being in a family and being the fire service family is that you have other people there helping you. And I think that actually being vulnerable to your needs as a man is strength. That's not a weakness. And I think a lot of people mistake it as a weakness, but it takes a very strong person to say, I need help. So I think that it's great that you're realizing that as you're a captain, you really got to be in tune with your crew. You have to know, sometimes they're not going to tell you, but you could tell by the way they walked in the morning that they had a hard last night, or them and old lady got into it, or their kid is sick. You could just tell as you just read people. And this is we are in the people business. If that includes our crew or it includes the citizens that we're serving, we're in the people business. Now let's talk more about rescue. My reason for coming to rescue, just so you understand, was that whenever I was riding out, I was on the list to make lieutenant. For whatever reason, we had two rescue calls with fours and a rescue task force. That's like unheard of. For in a period of 2 weeks that we call the rescue literally to 17s twice. And each time I remember watching these guys put things together and I'm like, that's so cool. You gotta be methodical, you gotta think it through. You have to use your equipment. You gotta know, okay, can we get this, board down in here? What can we do to get them out? And that logistic aspect drove me to want to challenge what I knew about rescue and fire service. I was greeted with open arms to come here at 4 Zone 8. So I'm excited about that and all the learning experience and high-rise buildings and all that. I think it's good to want to be challenged early on in your career. So going into that, I know there's several facets to rescue. We're going to start off with helicopter first. What is it that we as firefighters and citizens who's listening to this podcast need to know about helicopter rescue?
Oklahoma Task Force 1 has a team. There are rescue swimmers, and they train with the Army National Guard. I think there's 8 members right now. Several of them are on my shift. They train really hard. They're training with the military. We get into a major flooding situation, hurricanes, things like that. They'll pair up with them. And they'll winch down on a cable and pick people off roofs and rescue people out of trees and vehicles. It's pretty neat if you ever get a chance to watch them. I got a chance last year to actually drive a boat underneath one of the helicopters, work with the swimmers some, and man, it was a blast. But they train a lot. It's neat to go watch that and watch them train with the pilots and really see how good these pilots are flying these helicopters. And you can tell they love it. But it's a tremendous resource for the citizens in Oklahoma and Tulsa especially. They're ready to go anywhere, time.
So another aspect of K-9 unit, what is, because I know you mentioned that there's a search and rescue with the K-9, correct?
Yeah.
So what is that? I don't really know much about how that's set up. Is it something that a person just applies for, or do they just get a dog and train at it, or how does it work?
Okay, so the USAR team's Urban Search and Rescue, Terry Civedon is the program coordinator of that, and Terry's done a great job with it. We have a special operations building out at the training center, and it's full of equipment. But the USAR team is, it works a lot with Oklahoma City. So if you combine our two teams, it gets into FEMA typing, how we are requested, or if there's a major incident, say in Louisiana, and they put out to the emergency managers or to the EMAC that they need certain teams, you can put in and say, you know, Oklahoma TF1 can send you a Type 3 Swiftwater team. And that's how they pick and choose who they want to go. And so the USAR team out here consists of several members on multiple agencies. They're not just Tulsa firefighters. We have several members from smaller departments. GRDA Lake Patrol has a few that are on the team as well. But it's a bunch of members from a bunch of different agencies, and they're all technical rescue trained. And each person on the team kind of has a title or a job. And it's a big team that when they come together, they can deploy out the door. And whether it's a hurricane, structural collapse, some type of mass casualty or terrorist attack, structural collapse, floodwater response, you name it, it's a team that they can go out. We do a lot of wilderness search and wide area searching for people when they're missing. We get called and requested to do that stuff. So it's a tremendous resource for the citizens in Tulsa, for the fire department, for the country, really. And you'll see a lot of these states have teams across the country. And when major hurricanes come in, you know, those teams deploy and they leave home and they're down there to help their neighbors. We have a canine coordinator, which is Jeff Leon, and they have multiple dogs on the team. Some of them are what they call live find dogs. So they're trained to find live victims who would be lost or trapped in rubble or under debris or something. And then we have human remains dogs. So they're trained to find human remains. There's two types of dogs on the team. We have several handlers. Canine handlers, if you haven't watched them, it's pretty impressive. They are very engaged and they train. Being a task force leader, and recently, just this week, I got to go out with the K-9 team and watch them work, and it's pretty neat to watch. I have a ton of confidence in them.
Do they get any kind of stipend for that? Because if they don't, they should work their butt off with those dogs. I saw Adrian. She's a code enforcement officer. You know Adrian. I rode with her one day, and she told me that dog only eats when it works. So that's the way she trains her. Is that she has to smell out certain, because it's basically an arson dog. Mm-hmm. So she smells different chemicals and bark when she found one, and she gets food. So that's how she works for her food. So they train them literally every day. There is a notion on the fire service that ladders are a little bit slower as far as call volume. Bigger cities like fire department, you know, truck companies or ladder companies were the ones getting ahead of the fire, searching for the fire, because it's larger high-rise buildings. So for you, what was your vision and what was your perspective the moment you got told you're going to 29s on the ladder as the captain? Be honest. What was your reaction? And once you acknowledge your reaction, how did you shift it toward, I'm going to embrace this?
To be honest with you, I wasn't real excited. All of my career as a firefighter and a lieutenant on engine companies that were really busy. When I promoted to captain and they assigned me to ladder 29, I was like, oh man, you know, how long am I going to have to be there until I can go somewhere? Got to the station and through some conversations with my district chief, he was like, I want you to stay here and I want you to improve it. So when you promote to go to a really good station with a really good crew. But why not take on the challenge and try to make a company such as a ladder on the south side of town? And so I just kind of made it a personal challenge of culturally, I wasn't impressed with the way the opinions about ladder companies were when I came on. It's where the old guys go. You know, you're dragging a fan to the front door. Kind of how the culture on the fire department was. And so it was really hard for me to go, man, I'm going to be on a ladder. So I didn't know a lot about ladder work, to be quite honest with you. And here I am as a captain on one in a part of town that I'd never worked. I'd never worked south side, that south area over there around 29s. And so I just decided to take it on, make it a challenge. And probably a year of being there, I started compiling a list of things that bothered me. We can do a lot better job on ladder trucks. Talking to guys from outside of Oklahoma and looking at other departments, you start looking at why is everybody across the country all fighting to get on ladder trucks, and Tulsa, you don't even want to get near them. A lot of that just comes back to our culture and kind of the things that happened previous before we were here. So I just decided, you know, if I'm going to be here, we want to be the ladder company that we want to support our engine companies. There's no other department that has the firefighters that we do on Tulsa, especially, you know, our engine companies. Man, those guys they're the best in the country. They're quick, they're aggressive, and they get in there and they take care of business. And so being on a ladder company, vertical ventilation was not really anything we ever focused on since I've been on. And I didn't know a lot about it, to be honest with you. So that was one of my goals, was I wanted to start getting on roofs, start giving those engine companies some relief, hopefully, as I learned, cutting roofs, opening those structures up, getting some of the heat and the smoke off of them. And I realized if you're going to get on a roof and cut a hole, you've got to beat our engine companies. And that is not easy to do, which creates a whole nother bunch of challenges. So how am I going to recruit some young guys to buy into getting on a ladder down here? And I was very blessed and fortunate to get some guys. And they bought in, and we started training, and we started trying to share the workload, the engine crew, and prove to them that we were there, we wanted to work. It just took some time. Getting the right guys in place was definitely, you know, one of the keys to being successful with that. And I had a blast doing it. It was actually a lot of fun. And then once we started all the ventilation training and talking to the district chief and saying, hey, this is what we want to do. Chief Golden was very supportive of what we were trying to do. And obviously now Chief Gilkison, he's awesome. He's just the same, loves to support us and let us try to do some good truck work every time we get an opportunity to.
You mentioned this before when we talked on the phone yesterday. So we have high expectations, but we all fall to the level of our training. I think that's so valuable, especially to ladder companies. There's so many tools on those ladder trucks. Mm-hmm. And to be proficient and know how to use them, and how even know how to replace the blades on a chainsaw. I'm a city boy. I grew up in the city, so I had no reason to have a chainsaw. So obviously I'm on an engine now. Getting people to learn as much as they can about the ladder if they're at a company that has an engine in ladder. That way when they get over to a ladder, because at some point they're going to have to travel to a ladder. And I think that owning your assignment, owning where you are that day is important. And knowing both trucks is something that I definitely can work on. And I think that when you have a station like Forest, which we have a boat, chief, engine, ladder, rescue, it's so much to learn. It's so much to understand. And I think that keeps you on your toes, and you seem like a man who likes a challenge.
Yeah, it Station 4, you know, you really, until you're there and until you're a part of that, it's really hard to understand how much that everyone at Station 4 does in a shift. There is a lot going on down there. It's definitely challenging at times to stay on top of everything.
So let's talk about your bread and butter here. What made you realize that you had a passion for boat rescue? Why did you choose to create a company?
I was actually taking a structural collapse class in Oklahoma City, and I had the opportunity to meet a guy named Brian Weatherford. And he was one of the instructors, and after going through the class, he came up and asked me after the class. He said, hey, have you ever thought about teaching? He said, I have a company, and I teach a lot of technical rescue, and I'd love to bring you on on board. And so I just kind of visited with him and didn't really think much of it. And a couple weeks later, he called and he's like, "Hey, I'm teaching a boat class up in Kansas. Could you think you'd come help me?" And I said, "Sure." And I grew up right by a lake. Spent a lot of time as a kid, Grand Lake, with my grandparents, and always loved boats and water. And I thought, shoot, I'll give it a try. And so I went with him to a Swiftwater boat class and just kind of helped. Sat through the class, and it just hooked me right out of the gate. I've always loved water, had a passion for driving boats. It's kind of like my happy place is driving a boat. I saw a tremendous amount of value in that class when I went to help him, and I thought, man, this is really good training. That just grew into opportunity after opportunity. You know, it wasn't long, and I started teaching those classes myself for him. He decided to move on and gave me an opportunity to take the company over. Now that we have it, we mainly focus on water rescue. We teach Swiftwater boat operations, Swiftwater rescue. It's kind of comparable to low frequency, high risk. You know, if you look at Rescue 4 and you start looking at the demographics of what do we do a lot, we do a lot of car extrication, and then we do a lot of water rescue. And the water rescue profile across the country, everybody at times has flooding. They get faced with being in those situations, and there's a lot of firefighters that get injured or killed on water rescues. We've had some happen here close to Tulsa. And for me, the passion about water rescue and boats is this training is very valuable. We're given an opportunity to hopefully arm our first responders with some knowledge and information, mainly about hydrology and water and hazards in water, things for them to look for and know how to approach to keep them from getting in a bad situation. Value in that for me was passionate about something. You have a drive that makes you want to just go. I fell in love with it. I started seeing the reaction and the responses that I was getting out of people taking our classes were just excited. They were really engaged. And you put three firefighters or first responders on a boat doing a driving course, going as fast as they can go, they have fun with it. And I think that's important to have fun while we're training. Just the combination of tremendous value in the skill set that you can learn by going through that training. It's fun. It's very hands-on, interactive training. We try to make everything scenario-based. If, as they go through those classes, we're teaching them how to rescue someone out of a strainer. We're teaching them how to rescue somebody who's getting swept away. We're doing rescue techniques that hopefully they can take back with them to the station and apply those in the real world, be successful at it. So
if someone hears this podcast and they think, "I want some boat training from you, the one and only Captain Matt Bell," how would they reach out to you? Is there a email, a website?
It's matt@midamericarescue.com.
Okay, that's midamericarescue.com. Something I've learned about passion. Passion is a combination of deep observation and obsessive application. So when you really realize you love something, you can watch it all day long. You want to know the details of everything. And then you want to teach and apply it because you want to get so much better at it. So I love that you found your passion on the fire service, given that it's truck companies or ladder companies and boats. That's so awesome. And I challenge everybody in the fire service to figure out what their passion is. Find something that you really, really want to do and you really love, and be really good at that. Because at some point, people are going to go to you. For example, we have a guy at our station, Micah. Micah's the rope specialist. Teaches it. He knows it. I'm still trying to figure out what that niche is for me. But I think that everyone should try to find what their niche is. And even if you don't, maybe you just good at a little bit of everything. That's fine. But it does something to grow you as a leader, as a person, into the fire service when you have something that you really, really like. It keeps you going. Wouldn't you say so?
There's so much on this job, and it's hard to be an expert at all of it. It really is. I couldn't agree more. Finding your niche and finding that passion, we need members to do that, especially on the rescue.
That's great. I'm glad that you took the time out of your day to speak with me and talk about rescue. And to add on to what you said earlier, and we said this on the phone with each other, or I quoted my mom on this one, but be a part of the solution instead of complaining about the problem. Yeah. when you realize that you can contribute to solving issues, that you have to be persistent, you have to be patient, you have to do your homework, and you have to keep trying to make it better, it will get better.
Oh, yeah.
We need Matt Bales, right? We need the Captain Wards. We need the Chief Gilks. We need the Chief Carners, the Chief whoever, right? We need these individuals who are driven to want to do something to improve the fire service. And even if you're a new cadet, get on the job, just know that one day you may be in one of those individuals' shoes. So soak up all you can from these guys, because one day you won't be here. And I think it's so important that we value those who came before us, because they have something to teach us. And as they do, they actually speed up the learning process, because the mistakes that you made, such as falling on your face 38 feet, I know now what to do to not, so that doesn't happen to me.
Yeah.
So you've paid for, you know, that experience, obviously, in discomfort and nose surgery. But now, you know, when you talk to someone about it, you are a living, breathing specimen of what happened. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
You're able to say, hey, do it, because if you don't, this is what happened to me.
Yeah.
And nothing's more convincing than the outcome of what someone learned. And that was part of what I wanted to ask you questions regarding rescue and some of the things you experienced. So for closing here, what would you like to, so closing out here on this episode, what is it that you would like the audience to know, or those on the fire service to know about rescue, or something that just on your heart, period?
I saw something the other day. My kid, she shows livestock. She's really involved in that. And something popped up the other day, and it said, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. You know, if you apply that to the rescue, or you apply that to anything, there's an important lesson in that you have to start. I think if there's any member out there on the fire department that has an interest, pursue it, whether it's car extrication, engine company operations. I've seen a lot of things in the younger generation of firefighters that I really like seeing, and that's job interest. I'm seeing younger members out training a lot more than they did when I came on, challenging themselves. I know Engine 4 on B Platoon, over the last 2 weeks I've been gone, but they're working on high-rise operations every day, pulling lines and redoing hose loads and trying out different techniques and equipment, and they're doing it all on their own. They're going to be great because they've started that training. Probably for me, the biggest thing that I'm thankful for is the opportunities that people have given me to be involved with the rescue and be out and working on training and training scenarios. Obviously, having a support structure at home. I've got a wife who's very understanding, because when you start teaching and training, you're gone a lot. My kids are very supportive of me. That's been probably one of the biggest blessings for me, is I'm given the opportunity from home. Dad's out teaching boats. They're okay with it. I've been able to take my kid to a couple classes and let her see what I'm doing. And so she thinks it's cool, you know, that we're out training. If we can continue to let our members who have that passion, give them an opportunity to take something and run with it to make it better, I think that's what it's about. Keep working on having those resources in place to support our members that are out trying to make things better.
Absolutely. I appreciate you. And I'll end it on this note. I did an interview with Captain Ernie Jackson in February, and he texted me probably a month or two ago, and he said, when you leave this job, make sure your glass is empty. You poured everything you could into the job, because at some point in your life, you're not going to be here. You're going to miss it. So, and I think that's exactly what you're doing. Appreciate you again, Cap. I hope everybody enjoyed the podcast with Cap Matt Bell. I appreciate you all, and